Bicycling has become big business in Iowa. A new study shows that spending by recreational cyclists can generate $364.8 million a year. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Bicyclists bring a lot of money into the state, and of course, the event with the biggest economic impact is RAGBRAI. This summer, RAGBRAI 40 will roll across the state, and cyclists everywhere are waiting with bated breath to find out what the route will be. The announcement won't happen until tomorrow, but RAGBRAI director TJ Justowitz will be here today to give us a little preview. I'll also talk with Mark Wyatt and Nick Sobosinski of the Iowa Bicycle Coalition. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Right now, bicyclists from around the state are in Des Moines for the 8th annual Iowa Bicycle Summit going on today and tomorrow. Later this hour, I'll talk with Mark Wyatt and Nick Sobosinski of the Iowa Bicycle Coalition, but we're going to start today with the biggest event of the Bicycle Summit. Tomorrow night, the director of the Register's annual bike ride across Iowa will announce the route for RAGBRAI 40, and he is here with us today. TJ Justowitz, hello.
Good morning, Charity. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
I know that cyclists everywhere are really excited about the announcement tomorrow night. This announcement party has gotten to be a really big deal in recent years. How many people do you expect to be there in person to find out about the route?
We expect about 1,000 people that'll be there live to see those 8 overnight towns revealed. This is the third year we've done this event. And the nice thing about it is it's a fundraiser for the Iowa Bicycle Coalition, which I believe you have the executive director on later in the show.
I do.
To talk a little bit about some of the great things that they're doing. But it's just a great marriage between two organizations to just do great things to help bicycling in the state of Iowa.
And you'll also be online at the same time, so people who didn't catch a flight to Iowa in the middle of January can also find out right away?
You bet. There could be people all around the world looking at it. I just happened to get an email the other day from someone from Israel that was coming and would actually be watching the live streaming. So it's truly an international event. It's not just Iowans that are caring where RAGBRAI 40 is going to end up.
How do you decide the route?
Well, that's a great question. There's probably about 200 towns a year that are potential overnight stops. And we hear from about 180 to 190 that say, we would really love to host this year. So we try to sort through those towns and come up with a creative route that's safe and enjoyable for everyone. That's different than any other route that we've ever done. So over the 40 years, the route has never been exactly the same. But our number one goal is to provide a safe and enjoyable experience for everyone and visit the parts of Iowa that'll just put on one heck of a show during the summer. So trying to pare through all that, it's a bit of a challenge. And we've been at it pretty much since the end of RAGBRAI 39, preparing for RAGBRAI 40.
And who is we? How many people are involved in making this decision?
There's just a handful that go nameless and faceless because they get lobbied throughout the year, various people on our staff in our building at the Des Moines Register. But it's a very few people that make that decision.
And, of course, as we talked about, this big party, this big announcement has gotten bigger and bigger over the last 3 years. Have you had to increase secrecy and safety measures to keep the route secret?
Well, I figure they've been keeping it a secret for 40 years, and it's not about to change the way we do things. So it's just one or two people that know the route going into today. And when you have too many people involved, kind of loose lips sink ships. So we've just pared it down to one or two people knowing the route until tomorrow night.
Well, Kyle Munson published in his blog that people should call right now to try to trip you up and get you to reveal something. So if you'd like to be a part of this conversation, you can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Now, of course, TJ is not going to reveal any of the towns along the way, probably, but you can ask questions about Ragbri or share your suggestions. Again, the number is 866-780-9100. And I remember last year, of course, there's a lot of conversation online that surrounds the Ragbri route before the announcement, after the announcement. A lot of people were surprised last year that Davenport was picked as the final city because Davenport was the first final city for Ragbri, and people thought you'd be saving that for Ragbri 40. So how influenced were you in picking this year's route by former routes?
Well, there are so many variables involved. It's not just, hey, let's save this town for 40, because there could be other things that are going to affect those towns that we can go to. So if Davenport last year really wanted to host Ragbri, and they've already thrown their hat in and say, we want to be a host of Ragbri 50. So I've already heard that from Joe Taylor over at in the Quad City saying, hey, we've officially thrown in our hat for Ragbri 50. So if there's eight great towns that can put together a route, we're not going to wait for a significant event. I can tell you right now, the eight towns that we're going to unveil on Ragbri XL, or the Roman numerology for 40, are going to be eight fantastic towns. And so there's no holding a town back or anything like that. I mean, we're just going to put out eight fantastic towns to start the thing off on Saturday night and go from there. And I think once those towns are announced, people will understand this is going to be a fantastic summer.
I think the moment along the route last year that got the most attention was the Twister Hill, which was on the day that Boone was the overnight town. A lot of people were talking about that. Have you found a mountain for people to climb this year?
Well, there might be one or two in there. It actually pays some homage to John Karras, who started this whole thing. Back in 1973, John Karras and Donald Call decided to have a little ride across the state of Iowa. And John was a self-proclaimed sadist that enjoyed finding the toughest hill in the state to make Ragbriars go over those. So every time I hear, you know, John's voice in the back of my head when we find a hill like that, I say, you know, Karras would be proud of this one. Potter Hill was kind of a tough one over by Dubuque that people are still talking about today. Twister Hill was another one last year that was a bit of a climb. So we can't make it too easy on people. We can't make it too hard. But when you get those little hills in there that actually have a name attached to them, they make some good memories.
I'm talking to TJ Juskowitz. He is the director of Ragbri, the Register's annual bike ride, or Register's annual great bike ride across Iowa. I can't believe I left the great out. How long have you been involved with Ragbri, TJ?
Well, I started actually as a rider in 2002. I was living in Florida at the time. The next year, my good friend Jim Green, who's now retired, mentioned that he was going to retire and invited me to interview for the job. I was doing bike rides down in Florida at the time. So 2003, I became an apprentice to Jim as he was about to retire. And then in 2005, they took the training wheels off me, and I've been the director since 2005. And just trying to keep this thing afloat, the people that came before me have done a tremendous job, from Jim Green, Don Benson, and the others, Karras Call, et cetera, have all done a fantastic job to make this event the oldest, longest, largest bicycle touring event in the world.
So you must have been pretty blown away when you rode it in 2002.
There's nothing to describe those first couple of miles of coming out on Ragbri and just seeing the miles of bikes and thousands of bicycles. There's nothing that a photograph or a video can describe, that euphoric feeling of kind of launching your first Ragbri. So there'll be probably about 30% of the people will be brand new to Ragbri when we push off Ragbri 40. So they'll understand what I'm talking about when they ride that first couple of miles of Ragbri.
Can you share with me other impressions from that first year that made it something you wanted to dedicate your career to for a while?
Well, when I wrote it at the time, I had no idea I would ever end up living in Iowa. I mean, I had no idea where Iowa was, truthfully, on a map. And to come up here and be overwhelmed by the hospitality, it was like a you know, just a, it transformed you back in time when people sat on their front porches and you know, talked to people. You know, you went and sat down in a church basement and had, you know, a baked lasagna dinner and homemade pie. The hospitality was second to none. And it just gave you such a great feeling to be here or to be, you know, riding in the state of Iowa that I just thought I've never equaled that feeling. And to have the honor to come and work with Ragbri and put together the routes and work with these fantastic towns, it's just been an absolute pleasure. I feel I've got the greatest job in the world. I get to meet some great people and the leaders of Iowa, but I also get to meet 10,000 plus just wonderful people that are going to come share our state.
Rob is on the line from Des Moines at 866-780-9100. Hi, Rob.
Hi. I have ridden the last 8 Ragbris, and I'm currently just 20, so... Yeah, I was 12 when I first did it, and I would like to say never do Potter Hill again.
What was wrong with Potter Hill, Rob?
Oh, I had to walk up a third of it.
And did you train hard?
Yeah. I mean, I ride about 2,000 a year.
Oh, fantastic.
And it doesn't want to make you go back and conquer it?
No, I mean... Twister Hill was way better because I got some good speed going down the hill than going back up. But Potter Hill was just a pain, and I don't even want to drive up it.
Well, I wouldn't want to do it in the middle of winter. I've heard many stories of people said, I went back and conquered that hill. I rode it myself. We do a pre-ride to make sure that we personally know what each and every mile of the ride feels like firsthand. So we rode Potter Hill in June, and we were able to accomplish it. I wouldn't say my miles per hour were in the 20s or anything like that, but when you see that 18% grade, It's quite a challenge. So we'll try to take your advice and maybe not throw in too many Potter Hills, okay?
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Rob. And tell me about the pre-ride. How many people go on the pre-ride?
Oh, it's just a handful. What we're trying to do is go out and take a look at the roads and see if there's some roads that might be in need of repair or just different things about traffic patterns. If there's a lot of, say, ethanol trucks coming down the road, maybe you know, talk to that plant and say, hey, do you mind shifting your trucks for the day? Because we're going to have a lot of bicycles on this road. So it's really hard to do from a car. So we say, hey, let's get on bikes and do the actual day of Ragbri, ride Sunday's ride on Sunday, et cetera. And we've been doing that for about 5 or 6 years. We've actually enlisted a good friend of Ragbri, Jim Green, who's the retired Ragbri director. He heads up that effort, and our Ride Right chair, Dan McKay, who's down in Knoxville. Those two gentlemen head up the event. They've got a lot of Ragbri experience, probably 60 years of Ragbri experience between them. And they head up the route inspection team and do that in June.
I have to imagine that pre-ride is probably more similar to the original Ragbri than actual Ragbri.
You know, it's pretty close. Legend says 144 people actually made it all the way across the state in that 1973 year. I think about 300 started off. So it's a little closer to that than it is today. So it's a lot of fun. And in June, you get a little different perspective of our state than you do in July.
I'm talking to TJ Juskiewicz. He is the director of Ragbri, the Register's annual great bike ride across Iowa. Ragbri 40 is coming up this summer, and the route will be announced tomorrow. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about bicycling in Iowa. The 8th Annual Iowa Bicycle Summit is going on today and tomorrow in Des Moines. In a couple of minutes, I'll be talking to Mark Wyatt and Nick Sobosinski of the Iowa Bicycle Coalition. A little bit later this hour, we're going to talk to one of the most die-hard bicycle commuters in the state. And right now we're getting a little bit of a preview of Ragbri 40. Of course, the route won't be announced until tomorrow, but I'm talking right now to the director of Ragbri, the Register's annual great bike ride across Iowa, TJ Juskiewicz. And TJ, before the break, we were talking about how you get out there and check out the route and the towns. How much involvement does Ragbri have with the plans in the host towns? Or is that something that the host town needs to come up with most of their own plans?
Well, it's a partnership. We spend pretty much from January all the way till July. Every other week, we're in those communities working with local leaders. There'll probably be a committee of about 50 people in each of those towns that we name that'll work every day on RAGBRAI up until then. There's thousands of people that'll be volunteers come actual RAGBRAI day. But for 6 months, there's going to be a committee that we'll work with and actually visit that town every other week to make sure that they have everything ready that's RAGBRAI is going to need. So safety, again, is our number one priority. There's a host of state agencies and county agencies that help us make it safe. We work a lot with the Iowa State Patrol and the Iowa Department of Transportation to make sure those high-level things are, you know, looked after and make sure that we can put people on safe roads and they're protected by also having some law enforcement along the way.
Why do you think towns want to host RAGBRAI so badly?
Well, I get asked that question a lot, and people just assume that it's all about the money. And I can tell you right now, it's not. There's so much pride throughout our state, and they're more interested in showcasing their community. The number one thing that we hear from the towns, you know, hey, it was great. We made a few dollars, but we got to show people, you know, how we live. And that is so important to Iowa communities. There's so much pride out there statewide. And every time people come back, if they haven't been there in 10 or 15 years, those towns want to show RAGBRAIers, hey, look at our town now. We saw a great example, just the stuff that happened in Davenport and how much the riverfront has changed over those years. Carroll, Iowa was another example of completely renovating their community and showing off their brand new downtown. Or a town like Altoona that was a suburb, had not been on RAGBRAI. I think they were a pass-through town on the initial RAGBRAI back in 73, but they had an opportunity to teach people, hey, this is a great community, and come join us again anytime after RAGBRAI.
We have a question from a listener on Twitter. Is it an unwritten rule that you mix it up among northern, southern, and central routes from year to year?
There's no game plan about north, south, central, east, west. It doesn't matter. We're going to find eight great towns. It doesn't matter, you know, where they are in the state. There's so many variables involved that it couldn't just strictly be we're going to go north, south, or, you know, central. So we're going to come up with eight great towns, and there's no rhyme or reason to where we go.
You are giving absolutely no fodder to the RAGBRAI soothsayers out there, are you?
Nope.
All right. Jamie on Facebook says, I'm just excited for RAGBRAI to be here. I'm going to the party tomorrow for the first time. I'm absolutely stoked about it. I really don't mind where it goes as long as the roads are nice and the views are good. Probably should opt for a route with the best pie.
Pie is extremely important. You know, if you're not gaining weight on RAGBRAI, you're probably not doing it right. So hopefully all the training miles, your waistline could take a few extra pieces of pie or pork chops. So, but, you know, that's always something that we're looking forward to, trying to find a route. And the entire route will come out in mid-March. But trying to find a route that's scenic and maybe visit some of those neat places in Iowa. We're able to visit some of them over the years, like the Field of Dreams and the Grotto. Just places that you really have to get off the interstate, get off I-35 or get off I-80 to experience. And if we can bring cyclists by some of those great locations, you know, that's what RAGBRAI is all about.
As different places in Iowa and the Natural Heritage Coalition, and so many people have been working on building trails in Iowa, turning Iowa into the world capital of trails. Do the trails that we have now, do they influence your decisions on routes?
I don't think it influences decisions of where we go. I think it's what's tremendous about it is people feel safe to go out and ride those trails and they get their training miles in. I would highly suggest doing more training miles than just trails because most of the trails are former rail beds and they're mainly flat. So to do training on those only, you would be prepared for a Twister Hill or Potter Hill. But the nice thing about it, it introduces a lot of people to cycling. And those are multi-use trails. They're not just bicycle trails. There's people walking. There's people skateboarding, pushing strollers, et cetera, which they're all great for the state. There's been a lot of talk from the governor to everyone in the state about making Iowa the healthiest state in the nation. And I think trails just add to that. It's just one more thing to get out and get active. I live two blocks from a trail in Ankeny, and I can tell you right now, I bike more on that trail just because it's convenient and it's safe. And I see more and more people that are getting introduced to cycling because of those trails. And it's nothing but positive for cycling in our state.
Tom is on the line from Cresco. Hi, Tom.
Good morning.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Good morning, TJ. Tom Barnes from Cresco.
Hey, Tom. How you doing up there?
We're doing just fine. We just wish you well. We watch since we've been part of the family. We keep track of what's going on. And, you know, we know what goes on behind the scenes. And it's just a tremendous effort by a lot of great people. And just hope to see you in Northern Iowa this year.
Well, thanks, Tom. Tom firsthand experienced RAGBRAI in a couple different fronts. He was our chairperson up in Cresco with his wife Sue and many others up there. And he joined the circus for a couple years working behind the scenes as a crew member. So he's a good friend, and say hello to you, Tom.
Well, and he's lobbying right now for a northern route, maybe a little late for lobbying.
Yeah, I think we've got maybe one or two that are we can probably switch around still. So we still got about 35 hours until we have to announce that route. So there's lobbying up to the last minute, I can assure you.
All right. Well, I'll ask you one more question that I know you need to get going. There are often criticisms of some of the heavy partying that go on RAGBRAI. A lot of people who have ridden it have said that in recent years it's really been a lot saner and safer in many ways. Are there concerns that you have that you're really trying to work on to make RAGBRAI even better?
Well, we're always trying to improve this event. As far as the partying aspect, I mean, it's obviously the reputation had grown nationally, internationally by the, you know, outrageous parties. But from some of the people, they say, well, we're getting a little bit older and a little tamer. There's still a lot of fun to be had. It's just a little bit more responsible. My hat's off to people at the Iowa State Patrol. They do a great job of making sure that people have a good time and follow the laws of Iowa. And there's still a lot of fun to be had out there. We just want to make sure it's responsible fun. And so people can have a good time as long as they're adults and having a good time. There's nothing wrong with that. It just adds to the excitement.
TJ Jeskowitz is the director of RAGBRAI, the Register's annual Great Bike Ride Across Iowa. RAGBRAI 40 is coming up this summer, and the announcement of the overnight towns is tomorrow evening. At what time, TJ?
The party starts at 7 o'clock for Iowa Bike Coalition members. 8 o'clock, the general doors open. Probably about 9-ish will be when the towns are announced.
All right. Well, we'll be watching. Thanks a lot, TJ.
You bet.
And, of course, that is the culmination of the Iowa Bicycle Summit, that event, that party where the RAGBRAI overnight towns are announced. The Iowa Bicycle Summit, now in its 8th year, is going on at Veterans Auditorium in Des Moines today and tomorrow. It's organized by the Iowa Bicycle Coalition. And with me now, Mark Wyatt, Executive Director of the Iowa Bicycle Coalition. Hello, Mark.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you for having me.
And Nick Sobosinski is also with us with the Iowa Bicycle Coalition. He's also Program Director of Safe Routes to School. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Charity. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And Mark, what's going on at the summit today?
You know, we have two kind of things going on. Our first thing is an engineer's workshop, engineers, planners. It really deals with bicycle facilities and how we can better integrate bicycling into our built environment in our community. So we have a lot of community officials, a lot of consultants, a lot of people that work on bike plans and implementation of bike plans are here today. But we also got a trails track. So it's an opportunity for trail managers and land managers to learn how can we do better maintenance. How can we think beyond rail trail facilities what's the future of trails going to be in Iowa? So we have some really great opportunities to learn from our peers and learn from some experts that we brought to Iowa.
So today is really the day for people who are intimately involved in building these environments and in cycling in the state.
Yeah, we've learned a long time ago that it's really easy to get the community officials to come on a weekday, and your rank and file folks that like to bicycle will love to come on a weekend. So we try to do something for both of those crowds.
And Nick, maybe you could tell us what's going on tomorrow.
Tomorrow we're going to have a big expo is sort of the thing now. I'm looking over all of our booths that we've got set up. I think we've got over 50 different vendors that will be here displaying things from different trails groups and different rides to companies that are going to be displaying products and have a bunch of their merchandise out for consumers to check out and maybe even purchase while they're here, along with a handful of free work sessions. So we'll be talking about safe routes for an hour and a half tomorrow. A bunch of different trails groups will be talking as well. So those are all free sessions that will be going on throughout the day along with the expo.
And Mark, recently the Iowa Bicycle Coalition released a study about the economic impact of cycling in the state of Iowa. Some very big numbers came out in that. Can you tell me a little bit about what you found?
Yeah, we're excited about that. It's almost $1 million per day is the spending impact for bicycling. $364.8 million is what the annual total is. So that's it's a huge number, but really describes how deep bicycling affects the state's economy. So we think it's really a great opportunity for communities to start to recognize there is some economic potential to putting that trail in or doing bike parking or trying to attract more cyclists to their communities. You know, the thing I think is really fascinating is that bicycling brings tourism out to smaller communities. Bicyclists really like to get out and experience those smaller towns. That's really what makes Rag Bri so great, too, is that to explore towns that you wouldn't normally see off the interstate. And I think that's an opportunity to spread tourism dollars widely across the state.
When you talk about generating $1 million a day, what dollars are you counting as bicycle-related dollars?
You know, this is everything from lodging to fuel to travel costs to buying bikes and parts and accessories. And it's there's some also some indirect calculation, you know, for that vendor to supply their thing and pay their people, and where's that money kind of trail going to. The University of Northern Iowa produced our study, and they did a great job of using some national statistics and also balancing it against some other states' economic studies that they did also. So they're really excited about those numbers. They actually have a session tomorrow where they're going to explain a lot in detail how they got to calculate those plans together.
You also took a look at the economic impact of bicycle commuters. What did you find there?
You know, that was interesting, too. And there's some overlap with the big number that we're talking about. But people that commute to work back and forth by bicycle, I believe it was around $51 million spending and indirect spending that was calculated to that. So by simply leaving your car at home and riding back and forth to work, there's a substantial amount of spending that happens.
Well, you also take a look briefly at cost savings of people bicycling. What are you showing there?
I thought this was an interesting part of the study, is that we calculated, so we asked about body mass index for the people that took our surveys to figure out, you know, what kind of the average health of a bicyclist was. And then we used those numbers against some of the health statistics that in the insurance industry has put out, and where BMI and non-communicable diseases like cancer and diabetes and things like that, how those sort of intersect. And what they came up with bicycling, you know, the physical activity you do lowers your body mass index, and there's, I believe, a $73 million healthcare cost savings. I think that's really important in Iowa because we have a large overweight and obese population, about 65% of the state. We also have a large segment of the population that doesn't get enough physical activity, at least the recommended amount of physical activity. So I think that's a really important number to look at, that if we can increase more bicycling, it can only increase the benefit for the state.
And over the past few years, what kind of impact have you seen in Iowa? How quickly is bicycling growing in the state?
You know, I think one of the really great examples is looking at the High Trestle Trail. It's a trail that has portions of it have been open for quite some time. But the last year they opened this great big bridge that spans the Des Moines River Valley 120 feet in the air. It's a spectacular signature piece. But what we're seeing is businesses that are lining up along that trail to try to connect with those consumers that are experiencing that trail. We've seen on one side of the bridge in Woodward, they're looking at doing a campground and some restaurant business. On the other side, they have a new business that located with a bar, and I believe they have a catering service that comes in and serves food in that location. But having that trailside business is really kind of a great direct example of people connecting with bicycling and trails.
Well, you mentioned that bar near the High Trestle Trail. Isn't that the bar that we heard so many stories about right after Ragbri? I can't remember the numbers, but they did amazing business during Ragbri. Is that the place?
We've heard some great stories on businesses doing some spectacular numbers during Ragbri, but I think the important part, and really looking at the economic impact study, is that bicycling can do that on a much longer-term basis. It doesn't have to be during that one concentrated week, but certainly attracting bicyclists to your community can have that impact also.
I'm talking with Mark Wyatt. He's executive director of the Iowa Bicycle Coalition. Also with us, Nick Sobosinski of the Iowa Bicycle Coalition. He's program director of Safe Routes to School. We're going to talk more about Safe Routes to School in just a couple of minutes. We do need to take a break here. We're going to talk more about bicycle commuting. I'm going to talk with one of the most diehard bicycle commuters in the state of Iowa. And we want to hear from you, too. Where are your favorite places to ride your bike in Iowa? Is there something that has changed in the state that got you into cycling? Maybe one of these new trails has been what changed things for you. And also, what do you think needs to change in Iowa to make it a safer, better place to ride your bike? Give us a call at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're talking about bicycling in Iowa today. Right now, the Iowa Bicycle Summit is going on at Veterans Auditorium in Des Moines today and tomorrow. And with me are Mark Wyatt, Executive Director of the Iowa Bicycle Coalition, and Nick Sobosinski, Iowa Bicycle Coalition, and Program Director of Safe Routes to School. And we'd love to hear from you as well. What do you think needs to change in Iowa to make it a safer place to ride your bike? If you're a bicycle commuter or you wish you could be, let us know. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Nick, you are the program director for Safe Routes to School. Tell me about the work you're doing.
Well, Charity, what we really try to do is get out into the schools. We work statewide and try to encourage kids to walk or ride their bike to school. And then we work with the cities and engineers and planners to try to make it safer for them to do so.
Can you give me an idea of how things have changed? I mean, a lot of us remember a lot of kids riding their bikes and walking to school. And there really has been a shift. Why is that?
Well, yeah, in the last 50 years, we've gone from over 50% of kids that would typically ride or walk to school to just about 15% that are able to ride or walk to school regularly today. And a lot of that's been a changing dynamic in people's schedules, but it hasn't been helped by school siting issues and moving away from the old-style neighborhood schools and into these larger schools that are usually on the outskirts of town. And not very accessible for children to walk there, whether it be too far or there's a major roadway that they're not able to safely cross to get there.
Those numbers you quoted, are those numbers nationwide or are those Iowa numbers?
Those are nationwide numbers.
Iowa has a commitment in many places to smaller elementary schools than in other places. So do you think those numbers are a little bit better for this state?
They may be a hair better, and Iowa, being more of a rural state, we end up with a lot of issues where we've got these schools, but kids may be 7, 8, 10 miles away from school, and it's just not feasible for them to walk for that reason because they're out in the country. So we have some different issues to deal with in Iowa. They're being handled in different ways, whether they be community bike trails that are being put in. There's a lot of those going on in northeastern Iowa where they've got big 10-foot-wide trails that are then run right up to the school, and that increases the accessibility, especially for a child who might be wanting to bike. It's very feasible for them to make that distance in a reasonable amount of time.
Well, as the title of the program, Safe Routes to School, implies that there have been other changes that have made it more dangerous for kids to ride their bikes or even walk to school. What are you trying to do to make it safer?
We offer a variety of things. Starting at the top, we offer a workshop for communities where we can come in and really talk about how it's beneficial for them to have increased walking and riding for the kids getting to school. So that's when we talk to folks from the city and local law enforcement and really let them know that the Safe Routes program is a worthwhile one and that there can be some huge benefits for the kids. Mark mentioned some of the obesity numbers, and those definitely aren't any different for children. And a 20-minute walk in the morning and a 20-minute walk in the afternoon goes a long way for some of those kids who may be completely sedentary otherwise.
Charlie's on the line from Cedar Rapids at 866-780-9100. Hi, Charlie.
Hi.
Hi, what's your concern?
Well, I live in Cedar Rapids, and there is a Cedar Valley Nature Trail that goes from north of town quite a ways up to Waterloo and beyond, and it also goes through town, but in order to get to downtown, you have to take what I call a roundabout circuitous route. There's no one nice north-south route that you can count on outside of that trail. And there is a north-south street, Center Point Road, that would be great for bicycling to downtown if they had a dedicated bike lane, and that seems to be a problem in Cedar Rapids. They do not dedicate bike lanes in this town.
Well, I think that's probably a problem in a lot of towns as well, and I know something, Mark, you've been working hard on lobbying for. What can you do to convince a city to dedicate bike lanes?
You know, I think it's a really great thing that you called, because I just finished talking with one of the Cedar Rapids city engineers who's here at the workshop today. So that's kind of exciting for Cedar Rapids, is that they've been proactive in trying to get some training and integrate things like bike lanes. I also know that the Cedar Rapids City Council is going to be considering some of their bike plan measures and implementation coming up in the next several weeks. So I would, you know, kind of send out the alert to keep your eyes open that we might have a potential change or sea change in the transportation system in Cedar Rapids.
What can somebody like Charlie do to make his voice heard?
Talk to your city officials. Talk to your city council people. Give them an email and let them know that it's your transportation as a community resident, and you want your system to meet your needs. And I think expressing that desire is really important.
Mark, can you give me an example of a community in Iowa that has been really responsive to people wanting bike lanes?
Cedar Rapids is actually a good example, because I believe they've implemented about 10 miles of bike lanes and shared lane arrows. Now, it's a large city, and 10 miles, you know, is not a huge impact, but they've done a good job with that. We've seen other communities, even as small as Jefferson, Iowa, that has implemented they're on the Raccoon River Valley Trail and have a bike lane running from the trail, which is a few blocks off downtown, leading people to downtown. You know, it's not a huge issue, but it certainly guides people from that trail to get to where the businesses and services that they need are. So I think there's all kinds of communities that have really done it. Des Moines has been doing a spectacular job in implementing bike lanes over the past few years, with probably their most famous example, Ingersoll Avenue, going from a 4-lane road to a 3-lane road and adding bike lanes in the process.
Charlie, thank you so much for your call. And if you'd like to join our conversation, call us, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And joining us now is Steve Getzelman. He's the co-owner of 30th Century Bicycle in Iowa City. And when I went looking for the most diehard winter bicycle commuter I could find, Steve, your name came up. So thanks a lot for being here today.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me on.
And you actually gave up your car about 5 years ago, right?
Yep. I wasn't using it very much at all any time of the year, and it just didn't make sense to keep insuring it and titling it. So just let it go. Gave it to a friend, actually. So
how long is your daily commute?
Well, currently it's just under 2 miles. It's like a mile and three quarters or something like that. So maybe not the most hardcore winter commute in the state of Iowa, but I do it every day. So.
Right. And every day on your bicycle, are there days when you leave it at home?
Occasionally I'll walk to work. I don't ever call a cab or take a bus or anything. So always out there in the weather.
What would prompt you to walk as opposed to riding?
Well, sometimes just personal choice. If it's a nice day and I just want to take a little extra time, I'll walk. But also, like last winter, we had a specific snowfall event where maybe 2 feet of snow fell overnight. And so I just took snowshoes and snowshoed down to the shop that day because not many roads were even clear in the morning. So,
do you have special bicycle equipment, like a special bike, special tires for winter bicycle commuting?
I have a specific bike, winter commuting, just with all the salt and ice and the sand that they put down on the road, it can kind of wreak havoc on some things on a bike. So I just have a specific bike that I just know is the one that kind of takes the abuse the best. So I do have a specific bike. And the only major difference on it from the bike I ride during the summer is it just has a studded tire on the front. So it has little metal studs to help engage the pavement to prevent crashes.
Can you tell me about a close call? You must have had a few with winter ice and snow.
Oh, sure. Just last week I was riding and I was crossing train tracks at grade tracks that kind of came across the road diagonally. And I knew they were there, but I wasn't really paying attention. And the tracks had been packed with slush, so they just looked flush. And when I went over it, the studded tire held fine, but the rear tire just followed the track and slid way out to the side. And I didn't crash because the front tire stayed where it was, but I almost crashed.
What do you wear to cope with the weather?
Personally, I don't know. You can buy a lot of technical gear, and a lot of people out there making, stuff that's waterproof yet wicking. But personally, I just go for what most people wear. I don't wear anything really unusual. I just, if it's really cold, bundle up. So maybe some thermal underwear and, boots are good, heavy gloves. I don't really commute in anything other than just normal clothes that I wear all day then.
We've been talking about the commute, but of course, since you've given up your car and you do most of your traveling by bicycle, there must be other challenges. How do you grocery shop?
By bicycle. It's kind of convenient where I live and where I work that I go right by the New Pioneer Co-op in and out every day. So normally I'll just stop. And, just a backpack worth of food will get me through the day. So
you don't buy in great bulk, huh?
No, occasionally, but there's different ways to do it with panniers and bags that hang on your bike off a rack, and there's baskets and all sorts of different stuff you can use. I don't know. It's not ever been a problem getting groceries, I guess.
And you and your partner both bicycle commute. You gave up your car together, and people haven't been that nice to her recently about her bicycle commuting. What's been going on?
She had, you have to take it as it comes, I guess, but she had last week when we had a little bit of fresh snow on the ground, somebody took the time in their car to pull up next to her and roll down the window and say that she was a danger to herself and everybody else using the roads, which isn't true, and so it's just it's not fun when you hear that, but everybody's entitled to their opinion, I guess, even if it's wrong.
Does that happen very often?
No, I wouldn't say, especially in Iowa City. I mean, there's a lot of people that do ride all winter here, so it's not that unusual, but you just encounter somebody, maybe they're having a bad day or something and want to take it out on you because you're out there. You can't say something to somebody in their car with the windows up and the heat blaring, but you certainly can to somebody who's out on a bike. So,
well, and there are a lot of cyclists in Iowa City. There are a lot of bike lanes in Iowa City. But as a bicycle commuter, what do you think is needed to make it more convenient, more safe for more people to do this?
There's an organization in town, Think Bicycles, that's countywide for Johnson County. And so we just had a meeting last weekend trying to identify what Think Bicycles wanted to approach as the top 10 advocacy initiatives here. And there's a lot of, you know, it's varied. We quickly threw out a list of 25 things that should be addressed and could be addressed to encourage. But I don't know, as far as, I think Iowa City is pretty rideable in general. And so there's definitely, there's trouble spots and all that kind of thing. But I think really one of the things that you see when you look at bike advocacy and bike advocacy numbers is the more people that choose to ride, the more people will choose to ride, because you see people out there doing it and everything gets safer for everybody. So I don't know, I just think in a town like Iowa City, just if more people chose to ride their bikes as transportation, it would kind of exponentially increase the number of people that do it. Because I think that town as it is, yeah, there's definitely things that could be done, but this is a very, very viable biking community here already.
So. Well, and this has probably been a dream January for you.
It has, yeah. It's, and that's one of the things, too. If you want to make the commitment to riding your bike all winter, don't just say you're not going to ride during the winter, because there's, you never know what the weather is going to bring, and you might have a 40-degree day in January when the roads are dry and clear, and you can easily ride to work.
We've had a few of those this year. Steve, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Steve Getzelman is the co-owner of 30th Century Bicycle in Iowa City and a daily bicycle commuter. And Mark, I saw recently that House File 276 made it through committee, I think. This is a bill about making the penalties a little bit harsher for people who pass too close to bicycles. Can you tell me a little bit more about it?
Yeah, I actually don't think it changes much of the penalties too much, but it does define safe passing distance for a bicycle. And there's about half the states in the country have a 3-foot passing distance law that define that. We've talked with the law enforcement folks quite a bit, and they believe that it's easier for them to have a specific distance that they're enforcing, although I think it's always a reasonable and prudent thing for motorists to use the opposite lane to pass a bicyclist and give plenty of room. We know in the realistic sense that it doesn't always happen, and we want some really specific parameters. I think there's an education component to that House file, too, because that safe passing distance would go into the driver's exam, into the driver's manual, be taught in driver's ed. And I think that's an important education component that a law can serve in that capacity.
We have a question from Larissa on email. She says, my husband and I started biking last summer. We really enjoy it, but one reason we don't do it more is because we're very ignorant of the laws for cyclists. For example, when I get to a stoplight, I'm not sure if I should follow automobile laws and go when the light turns green or follow pedestrian laws. Are there classes available to teach people the laws of cycling?
You know, there are. We actually hand out a little wallet-sized business card that's printed on both sides, folded in half, that have a lot of the laws of bicycling. But I think the big thing to remember, and this is written straight in the Iowa Code, is that bicyclists have the same rights and duties as the operators of a vehicle. And that means that you do follow laws, just as vehicles do. And if you keep that in mind, I think that you'll fare best and be treated best if you act as if you were another vehicle.
Angela's on the line from Des Moines. We have just a minute. Angela, what's your question?
Hi, my name is Angela McBride from Des Moines. I am curious, Mark, if we've always speculated that bike trails and lanes or recreational trails and lanes increase the property values. And I was curious if you have any examples here either in Iowa or in other states where that has been the case, where trails have come in or bike lanes have come in and the property values have increased.
You know, we've actually seen some anecdotal evidence to that, but I haven't seen a real solid report on that. I do believe that there's been a report done, at least that I've heard of, but I just haven't been able to get my hands on it. I don't think it would be too difficult to know that a trail becomes a quality of life issue, and I know a lot of people and businesses look to locate near trails, and they find that an important thing for the families and for their employees, if they're a business, to be able to be near some sort of recreational facility like that.
Well, Angela, thanks for your call. And Mark, we're actually out of time, but thank you so much for being with us today.
Hey, thank you, and I look forward to seeing everybody at the Summit and Expo tomorrow.
All right. Mark Wyatt, Executive Director of the Iowa Bicycle Coalition, also with the Iowa Bicycle Coalition. Nick Sobosinski, thank you, Nick.
Thank you, Charity.
Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Catherine Perkins, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. I'm Charity Nebbe. Monday on the show, Finding Your Fire.